Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Wanted to do a special Saturday evening podcast on the Warriors' 124-121 win against the Bucks. Exciting game, lots going on with it, and to break it down with me is Frank Madden. He runs Brew Hoop, and he's the Locked On Bucks host, so this is a crossover episode. And it was fun talking with him because this was an interesting game, kind of a, I wouldn't say a clarifying game, but definitely one that we learned a fair amount about both teams, and to get his perspective on the Warriors as a Bucks writer and everything else like that. And I thought it was a good conversation, runs I think about 35 minutes. I hope you enjoy it. Well, that was surprisingly fun.
The first half felt very fun, and from a Bucks perspective, as soon as those threes started to fall and the Warriors started to fizz that ball around, my heart began to sink a little bit. But credit to the Bucks, they actually came back in the fourth quarter with that small lineup, and I mean, you couldn't have asked for more chances probably at the end, and they just couldn't get anything to go down, literally with Giannis missing a dunk of all things included in that. So I'm sure they'll be frustrated with it, but, you know, on the whole, obviously a pretty damn good effort from a team that's been struggling of late.
Yeah, it feels like kind of one of those outcomes where it's a growing experience for the Bucks, and moral victories are terrible in a lot of ways, you know, because especially a moral victory like this, where the Bucks absolutely could have won the game. Like, you know, I don't think that was the most likely outcome when the Warriors were up in the third quarter the way they were. But once you got to Giannis having a dunk when they were down two, and then the next possession to Ledovich missing a three down two, those sorts of things kind of do stick with you. But it is strangely amusing how the Bucks the last couple of years have consistently played the Warriors very, very well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually, you know, this spring watching the playoffs, and I kept keeping track of whether any other team was going to outscore the Warriors in aggregate head to head last season. And I think there was at one point the Thunder actually were outscoring them in the playoffs, you know, including the playoffs and regular season. But then that obviously kind of went the other direction in the end. So I'm pretty sure I was looking this up that I think the Bucks were the only team to outscore the Warriors head to head last year, which, you know, is strange. And, you know, obviously two games is probably why, because they had the one game where they won by 13 and then they kept it pretty close. We're leading in the fourth quarter at Oracle. And I actually rewatched part of those games because I was kind of thinking, like, were they just switching a ton? But they didn't really switch that much. And as much as the Bucks have, you know, had a lot of length, especially when Michael Carter Williams is around, you know, they didn't like play pick and rolls like dramatically different from, you know, what they would normally do, or, you know, it wasn't like everything was a switch or something like that. So it is interesting that they've played them really well the last couple of years. And I think interesting matchup between these teams now, because the Bucks are a team that score a ton in the paint. They obviously like to get to the basket. They're still not a 3-point shooting team. They shoot them more than they did last year, which was, you know, mockably low, a low number of 3-point attempts, and still trying to get that number up this year. But, you know, with the Warriors not really having much rim protection now, and on the flip side, with the Bucks being a team that swarms and probably overhelps all over the place, they're going to give up tons of threes. And obviously that plays into the Warriors' hands. So it was interesting, I think, especially once the Warriors start to shoot threes, that that it didn't kind of completely get away from the Bucks. So hat tip to the young team. Maybe the Warriors got a little bored, but, you know, that's hopefully for them, it's a growing experience. And we'll see. They have Orlando coming in starting next week. We'll see how they play in that game, if they can kind of maintain some of this energy and momentum.
One of the most surprising parts of this game, because I saw a lot of what you saw kind of in the lead up to this, just in terms of I watch the Bucks a lot, I enjoy watching them, and I expected this to be a game where both teams did well in the interior, you know, in the restricted area in the paint. Both teams shot below 20% in the paint non-restricted area, and both teams shot below like 62% in the restricted area. And it's true. I was just floored by that. And some of it was just missing chippies that they should have made. Like, there was that possession where Zaza Pachulia had like three offensive rebounds off his own misses. And so those do pile up. But I didn't expect that angle on it, but the Bucks were, at moments of this game, the Bucks were hitting everything, and then at the end, the Warriors were missing some shots, and also the Bucks were contesting. Like, that last 5 minutes, the Warriors weren't getting good looks.
Yeah, I think the Bucks do deserve some credit defensively for what they're able to do. I it's interesting. You tweeted, why haven't we seen Teletovich before the fourth quarter? And kind of this is just a classic Jason Kidd complaint. You know, he just sort of, his low rotations, like he'll just not go with the guy for a long time and they'll throw him in randomly. And, you know, we saw Greg Monroe basically not at all the last three games, which is a whole nother story. And I have no idea what might be going on between them, but Jason Kidd is trying to play now two centers, and pretty fascinating that the most productive center he has, really hasn't played at all the last three games. Maybe not a great matchup tonight against a Warrior team, but, you know, Greg Monroe also played really well in this fixture last year in Milwaukee when the Bucks won. So it's definitely an interesting combination. And the Bucks, I think, you know, defensively, they've been so up and down the past couple of years. They were great with Zaza, of all guys, anchoring the middle 2 years ago, completely fell off a cliff last year, playing basically the same scheme, and teams kind of figured them out. And without Dudley and Zaza, they kind of completely went in the tank last year. So interesting that they've been better again this year. They came into this game 10th. And, you know, that's going to go down now that they got lit up for 124. But at least they were able to make the Warriors work at times. But obviously, you know, you look at the Warriors hitting 14 out of 38 threes. I guess you can live with that, considering you were still close. But obviously, they had to really kind of bear down and finally make some shots there in the fourth quarter to give themselves a chance. And they at least had one, for they had multiple chances down the stretch.
The part that was completely dumbfounding to me about Kidd's rotations was Michael Beasley playing 15 minutes during those first three quarters, because Beasley is fine. You know, he is what he is. But Teletovich does many of the things Michael Beasley does better than Michael Beasley, and their negatives are basically the same. And so I'm just sitting there going, well, what are you doing? And then Teletovich comes in and plays well. And so it's like, okay, maybe I was right there. And it's frustrating because the Bucks, as well as Giannis and Jabari can carry them, they need help. Like, this isn't a team where those guys can just, you know, win them half their games or something like that. They're good, but they're not at that level yet. And so you need the right supporting cast. And Teletovich isn't perfect. You know, they have all these other issues with it, but he helps. And when you're trying a lot of throwing a lot of stuff at the wall and nothing works, try Teletovich before you try Michael Beasley.
Yeah, I mean, Beasley has had some good nights recently, and he obviously has more mobility than Teletovich in terms of on defense. He can switch better. You know, he's not going to be quite as big of a problem in that sense. But, you know, by the same token, you know, on a night like tonight where the Bucks couldn't get a defensive rebound for the life of them, you know, going small, did it really change that much in terms of not being able to get defensive rebounds? Probably not. I mean, they still had issues down the stretch. They had a couple questionable calls go against them in terms of out of bounds plays, where I think Teletovich might have been directly involved in both of them, where he wasn't able to get the ball, and the Warriors got the call on the team rebound. I know our friend Nate Duncan loves the phrase team rebound, so got to throw that out there. But yeah, it was interesting that it, you know, Kidd would wait until the fourth to dust off Teletovich, a guy that is a guy who's played for him before. You know, he's quote unquote a Kidd guy, but Teletovich's minutes have been all over the place over the last couple of weeks. And so it's just kind of hard to figure out what exactly Kidd's trying to do, why, you know, Beasley's played for the most part. He's been the first guy off the bench over Teletovich, which is especially odd when you look at Jabari and Giannis and the value of putting floor spacers around them. I mean, even if Teletovich tonight, he goes 1 for 5, but just the pressure he puts on the defense, you have to pick him up, you know, 30 feet from the hoop, basically. It's just a different dimension that he adds to their offense. And obviously with Giannis and Jabari, especially Giannis not being comfortable shooting the ball, which we saw down the stretch, you know, passing up chances to shoot threes right when, you know, they probably should have been shooting threes. It's definitely a dimension to their rotation that you would think Kidd would go to more often. And who knows what exactly Jason Kidd's thinking on that. I hope that, you know, he's had a couple games now this week where he's actually gone to that small lineup for the first time this season. I hope we see it more often. And, you know, Bucks are 0-3 this week, but maybe that will be a positive to come from this.
It could be. And one thing that was intriguing going into the game, and actually I would say got more interesting during it, was both teams feature very talented forwards, Draymond and Durant for the Warriors and Giannis and Jabari. And figuring out who was going to guard who on both ends of the floor was something that I was intrigued by. And it did bounce around over the course of the game. And I thought Giannis down the stretch ended up making a big difference.
Yeah, I think that the one play he made that, you know, really kept them in it, where he basically had to defend two guys. And I forget, was it Iguodala who kind of came free into the lane and, you know, had Draymond basically. Giannis sort of had to hedge up towards him just a little bit to stop him from getting a layup, and through the lob pass. Draymond catches it and you think he's just going to lay it up for, you know, the easy bucket, but Giannis kind of comes back out of nowhere and blocks a shot. And obviously, you know, being able to make plays like that is something that very few guys in this league can do. And Giannis still certainly has his flaws as a defender. You know, he can't always keep guys, especially smaller guys, in front of him that well. But certainly he can make plays that, you know, out of his area, and just the kinds of athletic plays that just few guys can make. So having a guy like that on the court certainly is a nice trump card. And, you know, even Teletovic, I got really worried when on the last possession with Durant, when Durant had him basically, you know, sized up, and Teletovic was basically hedging him to go middle, which I was like, whoa, you're begging Kevin Durant to go middle on you. Is that really what we want to do? But Durant ends up pulling up and misses a shot, and the Bucks get a rebound and had a chance to tie the game at least.
And he took that shot a little bit early. Like, I mean, I understand that you want to take the shot in that matchup, but it's like, okay, you could spend a couple seconds trying to get a foul or trying to get something else. But, you know, as you could say, it worked out in the end. But yeah, the idea of Giannis on Draymond, like Draymond's role in the Warriors offense changes around a lot. Like sometimes he's just kind of a filler piece and is making more connecting passes. Like he had that nice lob to JaVale McGee. And then at other points, they are actually running some Curry Draymond pick and roll. And so at those moments, I thought it was best to have Giannis on him just because it's more versatile and that's more in Giannis's wheelhouse than Jabari's. And Durant is, he's a guy that's hard to keep up with, but he's also, he doesn't always push in half court sets in the same way. And so, you know, throwing Jabari on him for some stretches, I think that can work. It's imperfect. It's always going to be imperfect. That's the nature of having good talent. But I thought those guys competed. I thought all four of them for the most part did. And, you know, there was that weird thing when Jabari was going for the play and hit Durant's knee. It ended up not being a big deal. But the whole game was just kind of those sorts of dynamics. And then also, I mean, the Warriors having a lot of open shots and then their fortunes basically swinging based on whether they went in or out.
Yeah, the interesting part about Jabari is that, you know, I mean, it's no secret, defense is his big Achilles heel. And the interesting thing with him, and this is something they started doing a year ago, actually probably around like December timeframe, they started putting him a lot of times on opposing wing scorers. So for instance, I think I remember, you know, against the Pacers, you saw Jabari defending Paul George one-on-one more. And of course, you know, you might say, well, why would you put, you know, the weaker defender on a guy like Paul George? But Jabari's lack of defensive instincts probably show up most when he's off the ball. And when he's engaged and he's just kind of defending, you know, in space, he's not that bad. You know, I mean, he's obviously an athletic guy. He's a quick guy. He's strong. So you can't just get that easily bullied. So you can try different things, and the Bucks, you know, all season, really going back to last year, have, you know, regularly kind of switched things up and had him defending different guys. It isn't just as simple as putting Giannis on the best opposing player. So I think that probably works to keep Jabari a bit more engaged. And I think he's been better defensively this year, but, you know, the bar was so low coming into it that that it probably wasn't, you know, I don't know how much that's saying, but certainly on a night like tonight, you know, the main thing with Jabari is, you know, can he get his offense going? And obviously he did, probably more from mid-range than, you know, only took a couple threes, but started getting going from kind of mid-range and then got going attacking the basket as well, which obviously for a young player, good to see him being able to combine those things and also making some plays with five assists. So, you know, it was interesting to see Giannis and Jabari both kind of rise to the challenge against, you know, a guy like Durant, who obviously always been a lot of talk that Durant was, you know, one of Giannis's idols. And so good to see both those guys kind of elevating their game and, you know, trying to play well against a guy who obviously is still on a different plane.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've seen, Giannis, he does an all right job on wing defenders. It's one of those things where it's more about potential than what he's actually done. But I really like him as a kind of as a freelancing shot blocker more, and that actually lines up more with the four. You know, the idea of being more that guy who can be a weak side helper and things like that. And if Jabari can handle it, you know, the idea that you were kind of getting at is that, you know, you're trying to look at your best expected value, you know, so which guy there? And Jabari does not seem like the greatest help defender in the world, but for a couple different reasons. And so if that's the way that it works, that's the way it works. And that's also why having Chris Middleton would help so much, because then you could even slide Jabari to some twos, because a lot of teams play twos that just aren't that good. So you can just kind of sit in there and play Middleton on the better dude. But it was also weird in this game that, like, Durant was magnificent in the first half, 25 points, was just absolutely killing it. And then largely kind of, I think, due to things out of his control, it just didn't really materialize, in particularly in the third quarter.
Yeah, I think in the second quarter in particular, you know, I just had visions of what we talked about so much a year ago when, you know, those the Curry Green pick and rolls. You know, it was always the idea of pick your poison, right? Do you want to try to, you know, who are you trying to stop? And you're always going to have Harrison Barnes sitting in the corner wide open for a three. Well, this year, it's Kevin Durant sitting wide open in the corner for a three. And he was tremendous. I think he hit five out of his first six threes. You know, got the, you know, the Bucks were winning through a lot of sort of the, up into the end of the first quarter, through the second quarter. The Bucks had a little bit of an advantage there for a while. And then, you know, Durant in particular just started going off from three. And you know, it's always funny to me when people compare Giannis and Durant, which has been around since Giannis was drafted, you know, and obviously it's a physical thing. Steve Kerr talked about that, but it's so crazy when you look at a guy with Durant's physical skills and then what he can do with the ball and his ability to shoot. I mean, it's unbelievable. His efficiency is obviously off the charts this year. So it is interesting, you know, look at his final line, 5 of 8 from three. So as you said, the game kind of went away from him, but Klay Thompson, a guy that did step up big time in the third quarter. And a lot of that seemed to, maybe I'm just mentally kind of over-indexing on, you know, Jason Terry saying that Klay Thompson wasn't a James Harden caliber player. It seemed like Klay Thompson was going at Jason Terry whenever he was in the game. And you can ask, why is Jason Terry playing, you know, 19 minutes on a game in a game like this to begin with? But it seemed like Klay Thompson had a little bit of extra motivation. And he definitely came to play in that third quarter when the Warriors were building that lead.
This is certainly a team that uses extra motivation when it presents itself, and that could be a factor. But for Klay, the biggest thing in this was just that he was getting wide open looks and they just started going in. You know, he is an interesting player that, and this is true of a lot of guys, but I think it goes to a different degree with him, where once he starts making shots, then he starts taking different stuff. So he started out just making basically open threes, and then he started getting more aggressive and taking stuff. And some of those actually ended up being on Jason Terry. So they got those opportunities, and yeah, it was shocking to see Kidd go with the Dellavedova Terry backcourt together. Like, I understand playing them separately, not a problem at all, but playing them together was, I was just sitting there going, this doesn't feel like it's going to work. And, you know, it had some good stretches, but overall, I think it did struggle.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Terry is, I mean, this was probably his best performance of the season. Hit 3 out of 4 from deep, scored 9 points, did his little jet flying celebration at least twice, which is a season high as well. But it's definitely kind of one of those things, especially with his lack of size against a guy like Klay, who can just shoot over top of a lot of normal size shooting guards. And then with Jet being basically, you know, a former point guard who's maybe has decent size for a point guard at 6'3", but certainly at shooting guard, you know, his lack of length is going to hurt him. Attack on top of the fact that he's 39 trying to run around screen. So so that was definitely kind of a stretch. The Bucks did send Rashad Vaughn down to the D League earlier today, which was interesting because Rashad Vaughn's been way better than he was last year when he was basically unplayably bad. So it was interesting that they sent him down, and interesting that he hasn't played that much over the past week or so. But that kind of meant, you know, Jason Terry is basically, if you look at it as a 4-man guard rotation, you know, Delly has Brogdon backing him up and Snell has Jason Terry backing him up. So it'll be interesting to see if they can maybe minimize Terry's minutes a little bit more. I mean, I'd rather see Tony Snell probably get into the low 30s rather than see Jason Terry play close to 20 minutes. But we'll see how that works. I mean, the Bucks also have gone, especially in the preseason before Snell came in the trade, they tried to play actually really big with Giannis and Jabari at the 2-3 and Toledovic playing the 4. But we haven't really seen that during the regular season much. So it'll be interesting to see if Terry can kind of hold up, because obviously at his age, it's a challenge, and doubly so when you're going against a Warrior team. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Steph Curry, 1 of 11 from three tonight. You know, ended up with 20 points, but on 21 shots, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 turnovers. you know, it seemed like the Bucks, you know, Dellavedova, Brogdon, that they did generally did a good job of kind of keeping, you know, staying attached to him, coming around screens. For all the offensive rebounds that the Warriors picked up, it didn't seem like too many of them came to Curry for wide open threes. Didn't seem like he got many looks in transition that were open. Obviously, those are big parts of his game when he can, you know, find places, find space when a defense isn't set. I mean, how would you compare the way the Bucks played him tonight versus other nights? Because, you know, to be honest, I'm used to seeing Steph Curry make tons and tons of difficult shots. So even when you defend him well, he can completely go off. How much of tonight would you ascribe to the Bucks actually playing good defense versus Steph maybe just not having his game on?
It's definitely both parts of it, because Curry had, I would say overall, he had harder looks tonight than usual, but he also makes harder looks. You know, it's not something where right. that was necessarily preventing it. He has had a couple of shaky nights over the last couple of weeks. You know, the one against the Lakers is the most known one, because that's what broke his 3-point streak. But I think there was another game where he was like 2-for-8 or something like that. And so he missed a lot of them that he normally makes and most other people miss. Like, that was certainly a part of tonight. But there were, as you noted, fewer of those just wide open, you know, clean ones. And the point you brought up about offensive rebounds is something that I've been interested in, particularly this year, is that it feels like a higher proportion of those go to Klay. And I think that might just be happenstance, and also where they're located on the floor, because generally Klay is more like at the break. And sometimes those are the types of guys that can leak out. And so maybe it's that his guy leaks out more than Steph, because Steph's already kind of in a different place. But it absolutely does happen. And the other part tonight, and I don't really know how to attribute this, but he didn't look as good as he usually does in the lane. Like, he's actually improved a lot at that. I wrote about it for a recap of yesterday's game, about how he's shooting, I think it was like 72% at the rim this year, and he struggled a little bit there tonight. Some of that is, though, that the Bucks bigs they're pretty good at contesting, and they were competing the whole night.
Yeah, and certainly defensively, I mean, it's obviously interesting to say the least that Greg Monroe is not playing at all. Clearly on paper, you know, defensively against a team like the Warriors, Greg Monroe is a guy that obviously you worry about a lot more than someone like Plumlee or even Henson, just because that lack of mobility can obviously probably be exposed more, especially if, you know, they try to throw him into pick and rolls. I think one thing with Curry, you know, the Bucks defense is sort of geared towards taking away your first action and your first option because of all the help they tend to send to the ball. So in that sense, I guess maybe it's not as surprising that Steph, being, you know, the guy who's got the ball most of the time, not that he doesn't, you know, set screens and do kind of funky stuff off the ball as well that they try to get him freed up with, but probably makes some sense, you know, as you're saying, that the Bucks would be able to contain him maybe, or at least make his life harder than a lot of other teams might because of that focus. But obviously the flip side is other guys getting open looks, and, you know, clearly Klay and Durant benefited from that. Interesting. I think the one thing, you know, about those Bucks big guys, you know, I tweeted it during the game, the defensive rebounding, I mean, we've touched on already, but, you know, 18 Warrior offensive rebounds. The bench, I was just looking at it, but Warriors bench had 11 offensive rebounds combined, plus Zaza grabbing 6 from the starters, but Warrior bench 11 offensive rebounds. The Bucks bench had 10 total defensive rebounds, and it looks like the minutes were pretty close between those two bench units. So, you know, I think if you look back at this game, I don't think I have the second chance points in front of me right now, but it would certainly be interesting to see those, because obviously the Bucks are not a team that can afford to give the Warriors reload after reload. And especially, you know, Miles Plumlee, 5 offensive rebounds. I mean, he was very active offensively, and he's certainly a mobile guy defensively, but in 15 minutes, 0 defensive rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, that's certainly not what you're looking for. And, you know, Beasley, 1 defensive rebound. Monroe didn't get a defensive rebound in his couple minutes. Jabari only 2 defensive rebounds. So that was definitely an area where the Bucks have been much improved this year. But certainly tonight, it was a huge Achilles heel. I mean, I think, you know, their defensive rebound percentage was 63%, right? Which, you know, you give a team like the Warriors that many chances, yeah, it's just going to be really difficult.
The second chance points, it ended up being 22-16 for the Warriors, so not as big, but that's also because the Warriors missed a lot of those. They were 7-18 on shots, and I think at least half of those misses were from three by guys who can actually shoot them. So, you know, there is some good fortune in that, but it's also just, there's some good fortune for the Bucks that it wasn't worse. But you're right, like, that was a big pivot point in this game, and something that, because the Warriors have had some bad defensive rebounding games this year, is the idea of first shot defense versus second shot defense. And the Bucks did it, broadly speaking, did a good job on first shot defense in this game. It just wasn't enough to carry the day because they had these stretches, and also the Warriors had some nice bits in transition where you can't even really play good first shot defense.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm still having visions of Giannis rattling out that dunk late in the game.
That was shocking.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously that's, you know, you run that play 100 times, that might happen once or twice. Interesting, you know, obviously the Warriors are a team that used the 3-point shot so well in transition. Tonight, though, Bucks plus 8 in transition, 19-11, based on the stats I have right here. So clearly that kind of, you know, certainly the Bucks will look back for all the issues they had on the defensive boards. You know, they only forced 12 Warrior turnovers. Both teams really didn't turn it over much. Bucks at 13. You know, normally the Bucks defense, at least before this year, they haven't been as good at that, interestingly. But, you know, the defense is really predicated on forcing turnovers. They didn't do that tonight, but they still managed to get that 19-11 edge and fast break, which, you know, if you don't defensive rebound and you don't force turnovers, you'd think that would be really difficult to get fast break points. But they managed to do that tonight, and then they still had the plus 12 edge in the paint, which obviously, you know, if you're playing the Warriors and the damage they do from the 3-point arc, obviously that's an area that you need to be competitive in order to have a chance. So, interesting game for the Bucks. I think, you know, it's one of those things. I think the bigger question for them is, what do they do after this? You know, obviously you don't expect to beat a team like the Warriors, but they've now dropped to 5-7, and you know, 14 of their first 21 games are at home. So they have a schedule that basically demands that they start pretty well if they're going to have any chance of being in that Eastern playoff conversation. I don't think either of us saw them being in that conversation at the beginning of the season, but they've been, you know, somewhat pesky and plucky at times, have had some no-shows as well. But I was going to ask you about the Warriors. I mean, obviously 10-2, you know, nobody's going to be overwhelmed based on our exceedingly high standards of the Warriors. But, you know, it seems like defense has been sort of the one big challenge for this team coming into this year. They're middle of the pack coming into tonight in defensive rating. Obviously giving up 121 points to the Bucks isn't great. What do you see from this defense? You know, obviously missing the big guys they had last year is part of it, but do you think that's the big Achilles heel that might be you know, a fatal flaw against a team like the Clippers or in the finals, even the Cavaliers?
Probably not. But it depends on how Steve Kerr uses his rotations. You know, like, if he plays Zaza Pachulia with the starters, then yes. Yeah, that probably will be their fatal flaw. That will be their Achilles heel. But if he changes the way that big men are used, goes to more small lineups, which is what I expect, though it's not definite considering what happened, particularly in Game 7 of the Finals, like after Boga got hurt, I think that's the reason that I have pause on the idea of, oh, well, they're going to go to the best lineups, is the part of the Finals after Boga got hurt. But when you kind of parse the numbers with the Warriors, which is always dangerous when you're already dealing with a small sample size. I mean, tonight was their 13th game. Like, this is not, even if you're starting to split 13 games into smaller pieces, you're getting a little bit narrow. But they've done a pretty good job defending, and they've done a very good job with the Draymond at center lineups. And that's really the centerpiece of their playoff defense. However, there are legitimate concerns about their defensive rebounding, which was more of a Bucks problem tonight than a Warriors problem. But if we're talking about what that shift can do, it's going to require a more concerted effort by them on that end, as long as other teams actually put an effort on offensive rebounding. And one of the key tenets for the teams like the Cavs with Tristan, as long as he's on the floor, is that a lot of the best teams have good offensive rebounders. So that is something they're going to have to consider. And they're, you know, whenever a team, and the Warriors have done this, I would say this happened in the fourth quarter today. It definitely happened in the fourth quarter against the Celtics, and in more than a few other games, their defensive intensity can wane at very strange moments. And while you don't expect that to happen later on, the Warriors have put out a few clunkers in playoff games recently. I think it was game one of the Western Conference Finals against the Thunder. They played a shaky game. They won a couple of those. They had played a bad game against the Pelicans the year before. So if they have one or two of those in a series, then that's enough to swing it too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it strikes me last year in the playoffs, I mean, we kind of forget about it now because of the way the playoffs ended last year. But and this isn't exclusive to the Warriors, but it kind of was remarkable to me how many times elite teams playing other elite teams just sort of had clunker games where they, you know, I don't want to say they didn't show up, but they weren't competitive. And, you know, I think Steve Kerr has kind of talked about that, you know, how the Warriors have had some maybe underwhelming performances early in playoff series. But obviously, you know, regular season time, you know, they're having to every night play teams that are trying to knock them off. You know, I think you saw that from the crowd tonight. This was a sellout, the first sellout of the season for the Bucks. Obviously, there were a lot of Warriors fans in the crowd as well, but certainly I think that also kind of brought out the best in the Bucks crowd in Milwaukee. And you know, the challenge for the Bucks is, and I guess you could argue for fans too, is bringing that kind of intensity every night. You know, the Warriors are used to that, teams kind of taking their best shot at them, but it'll be interesting to see for a young team like the Bucks, can they bring similar efforts that we saw tonight from them against a great team like the Warriors, against lesser teams. You know, this is a team that scored 25 points in the second half against the Heat a couple nights ago, which is just, I mean, it was just unwatchable. So it's a little difficult to watch them, you know, struggle that mightily against a team like the Heat, which, you know, in their defense, I mean, the Heat have had a good defense this season, and they have Hassan Whiteside, and, you know, they have some defenders, but watching them score 66 in the first half and 121 in a game versus a team like the Warriors, obviously you kind of sit back and you wonder, okay, you know, when was this going to happen on a more regular basis? They had to have a run of three straight games. They averaged around 120 earlier this season, but you know, certainly that's been an area where I have major questions whether this team can really be even an average team offensively without Chris Middleton. And it just feels like a team that, you know, if they're going to be competitive, they probably have to be, you know, at least average or better defensively. And obviously coming off last season, that feels like maybe a tall ask with the likes of Jabari and maybe not Greg Monroe if he's going to play this, you know, this many minutes going forward. But it'll be interesting to see kind of, you know, the identity of this team. It remains pretty fluid, I would say. And certainly as we see Giannis and Jabari kind of growing and trying to figure out their games, you know, I think we'll probably figure out a bit more about how the Bucks will play.
Something I wanted to ask you, and this might not be an easy answer, but how would you define or identify success for the Bucks this season?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I wouldn't define it based on record so much. I think it begins with Giannis and Jabari and just those two continuing to expand their games and evolve. I mean, we've seen Jabari be much more willing to shoot threes and show an increased ability to hit threes. I mean, he was one for his last 11 coming in tonight, was one of two tonight. So he's had a couple games where he's hit a bunch of threes, and then he's had a lot of games where he hasn't hit threes. But we've seen him kind of get more aggressive. I mean, he took a lot of mid-range shots, and that was going down for him tonight. That's, I think, a part of his game that, you know, again, you don't want guys shooting tons of mid-rangers. But for him to be, you know, that kind of alpha scorer, guy you can lean on, he's obviously going to have to be able to hit some of those shots as well. And, you know, with teams, the way they play him and Giannis often sagging off, I think that's a shot he has to be able to make. So I think seeing those guys expand their games, you know, with Giannis, it's a much bigger question whether he can ever shoot the ball. But by the same token, you know, somehow he's doing all these other things, and he's, you know, so physically gifted and has ball skills that we don't see in a guy his size. He's able to still score efficiently despite the fact that, you know, nobody respects his jump shot. So I think as long as those guys are still evolving and expanding their games, I think, you know, if they win 32 games, you know, again, that would be zero improvement compared to last year, but it's really about them, especially with Chris Middleton being out. And obviously we talked about Jason Terry playing 19 minutes. If Chris Middleton's on this roster, Jason Terry isn't playing at all. So that's obviously a very different team. So I think it starts with those two guys. And I think you also want to get a better sense of who else on this roster do you even want to, you know, have roles for going forward, right? I mean, John Henson, Miles Plumlee. Unfortunately, you're never going to move Miles Plumlee's deal at this point. But, you know, some of these guys, who from this group can be, a rotation guy a couple of years from now when this team is hopefully much more competitive. And I think then the other thing is really, you know, can Jason Kidd figure out how to get this team to play, especially defense? And, you know, again, they were really good 2 years ago. They were terrible last year. They've been decent so far this year, this game notwithstanding. And as we said, they don't think they were necessarily bad in this game relative to the competition. So I think those are sort of the barometer, you know, kind of the things I would look at. If we can't see any improvement in this defense this year from Jason Kidd, then I think it's very fair to start to question, well, what, you know, what does Jason Kidd do as a coach? What, you know, what is his, what does he hang his hat on? He has not coached teams going back to his time in Brooklyn. Like, none of his teams have been good offensively. Defensively, it's been all over the board. So what exactly does he do? And unfortunately for the Bucks, if he can't get this team to, you know, at least defend or do something at an average level this year, it's fair to kind of start wondering, like, okay, well, you know, you just signed him to a 3-year extension. How are you going to feel about that if really this team can't find an identity under Kidd moving forward? So, yeah, I don't know if there's really a record number that I'd look for, but I think just seeing that improvement, you know, Giannis, I think, has a great chance to make the All-Star team if the team's record kind of is close enough to the playoff hunt. And Jabari, hopefully he'll be a guy who's, you know, giving you 20 points every night, and hopefully defensive rebounding a little bit better than we've seen him, and hopefully playing a little bit more defense. And if he starts to do that, then you start to feel better about this team.
You're right to not focus on the record. It just doesn't matter that much with this team, especially with Middleton out, because it's a non-representative sample. And there is this weird parallel between the Warriors and the Bucks. It's just that it's a different time frame that we're looking at. And the idea is identification. So for the Warriors, they have to figure out in the regular season how they're going to use their minutes in the postseason. And for the Bucks, it's more about using the regular season to figure out what they're going to do moving forward. And those are it's actually kind of a similar process, but it's just a different timeline. And so for the Bucks, as you said, figuring out, you know, who of Plumlee and Henson and maybe even Monroe, if he opts in, they want to keep, how do they want to fit them in? Toledovich is the same thing. I think they need to figure out how they should use him is actually more the thing than whether he's a good fit. And for the Warriors, that's Pachulia, West, McCaw, Looney, you know, like all basically everybody outside of their four or five best players. They just need to figure out, are they good? Are they good enough to play in the playoffs? And who do they mesh with? And that's really what the next couple months are for. And it's weird, like you talked about the idea of kind of like expectations with this Warriors team, that I've largely been able to separate record for them too, because it doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters in the sense that I'm sure they want home court. It was a big part of last year. You know, Kerr talked about that all the time once he got back from his back stuff, even though it still affected him, was the idea that home court was a big driver for them. It's actually probably the biggest reason why they got 73. And this year, I'm sure they would like it, but figuring out those bigger questions is there, because they're defining success based on whether they're holding the Larry O'Brien trophy at the end of the year and nothing else.
Yeah, it's a totally different mindset from certainly anything that I felt as, you know, I grew up in Milwaukee. I've followed this team for 25 years. They've had one 50-win season, one season where they went past the first round of the playoffs in 25 years that I've been watching this team. So I can't relate to that mindset at all, at least from a basketball fan standpoint. Everything remains very much, you know, sort of in the abstract and long term for a team like the Bucks. But obviously, I think both teams are fascinating for very different reasons. And looking forward, I guess we can circle the calendars. March 18th is the reverse fixture. The Bucks will be in Oakland for the second game of this series. And I'd say let's do it again, Danny. It'll be a really late night for me, but hopefully it'll be another interesting game, hopefully as competitive as this one tonight. And it'll be interesting to see if maybe the Bucks have made some progress on getting better as a general sort of team. And it'll be interesting to see where the Warriors are at that point, as they're going to be getting pretty close to having hopefully figured some of their questions that you outlined as far as a rotation and how they want to go as they head into a playoffs flare. You know, it's championship or bust.
Yeah, considering how the last couple of games have gone, I'm already looking forward to it.
I am as well. We don't know why, but the Bucks always seem to give the Warriors a good run. And now it's just a matter of the Bucks being able to give, you know, the Orlando Magics and Miami Heat of the league a good run, too. So we'll see. But anyway, thanks, Danny. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, we'll circle our calendars for a few months from now.
Best of luck until we talk again.
Sounds good.
Thanks again to Frank Madden for taking the time. You can read him at brewhoop.com. You can listen to Locked On Bucks, and you can also follow him on Twitter at brewhoop. That's BREWHOOP. The Warriors are now 3-0 on the road trip. I will have my usual write-up on The Athletic going up whenever. If you want to read anything about the Celtics game, you can also check that out there. And since this is the last episode I'm going to do before the weekend of games, you should definitely check out Locked On Niners and Locked On Raiders if you are a Bay Area sports fan or whichever NFL team you want, because Sunday is, of course, the big day for that. So they'll have episodes that come out before the next time Locked On Warriors airs. I am legitimately unsure if I am going to do a new episode on Monday. I think it will depend on various factors, if we learn anything new or anything like that. But the Warriors do play Monday. I was going to say Monday night, but it is more like Monday afternoon on the West Coast against the Indiana Pacers. So still kind of in flux with that. But thank you so much for supporting the show. It's been a lot of fun. And you can check out my work on The Athletic. I'll have a new piece on the Sporting News coming out, but it's not Warriors related. It's going to be about John Wall and a couple other different things. And then League Pass Alert, or actually it's called League Pass Games of the Week now on Real GM, and plenty of other stuff. So if you want to support the show, I really do appreciate it. You can like it or rate it, review it, all of those sorts of things on whatever podcast player you have. Great if it's iTunes, totally fine if it's not. And then subscribing, downloading every episode, big help to us, just because those are the measures that advertisers still use. It might sound a little bit crazy to you, but it really is. And then if you want to check out our more regular sponsors, though they're not on this episode, SeatGeek and Mack Weldon. And if you need information on that, you can either reach out to me or whatever. Feedback on the show, Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, or DannyLaRueMBA@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.